Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for Dungeon Masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Oh, if we got a lot to talk about this week. So much, in fact, that there'll be no endless search this week. So if that's all you listen for, sadly, you're going to have to turn off now. But
there
Matt
is that,
and Joe...
There is that one guy who hates the endless search, so he'll be delighted.
Yeah, this will be his favourite episode ever. Yeah. And do you know what? I'm predicting this is going to be a fantastic episode, because these are the episodes I enjoy most, where basically for a long time...
You're just cutting off the rest of the team.
Yeah, yeah. I'm so sorry, everyone else. That is the main reason. The other main reason is we're just going to speak about a lot of things that we're either very excited for or that we've loved playing. Mm-hmm. I think pretty much everything on this list is good, which is...
It's at the very least good.
Yeah. So, you know... No moaning. But if you're here for us just to moan, turn off now. It's not happening. There probably will be the odd moan because we can't help ourselves because we're British.
Oh, is that you're playing into the UK thing this early?
Yeah. Oh, we're just British. We love a moan.
We love a moan. Oh,
it's endearing.
2 days ago, I was complaining it was too hot. Today, I'm complaining it's raining. Never happy, me.
Unbelievable.
How are we doing, though, Matt and Joe?
I'm good. I'm very good after last night. Look at all that.
Ooh,
explosion of good stuff.
It was nice.
Did you watch the PlayStation showcase as well?
I did.
Nice.
Yes.
Did you have the same reaction to me when they played that fucking rubbish chess advert at the start of showcase that you were like,
I was so confused.
I was watching that being like, fuck, if this is how they're spending the first 3 minutes of this showcase, it is going to be a shitter.
It went on and on and on.
I don't really understand how that advertises PlayStation to a group of people that have tuned in because they already like PlayStation.
Yeah. It has. The thing is, right, play has no limits, so you do have to understand that play has no limits.
We started
therefore...
a podcast that we said we weren't going to complain about complaining about how
exactly.
Sony opens.
Play has no limits if you have enough money to upgrade your games.
My wider point here is, I saw that and I was like, we are in for bollocks, and then almost straight away there was something where, well, you know, very soon after I was like, this is amazing, and it pretty much stayed amazing after that point.
Yeah. That was a weird advert, though, wasn't it? Because you wouldn't have apart from the big statue of Aloy, it was like, what's this got to do with players?
Yeah, it was really odd. It was like a banner of Nathan Drake. You're like,
anyway, I'm going to say from that point on, it was banging. It dipped a little, but we're not going to talk about everything, because, you know, we haven't got time to talk about everything they showed off. We're going to talk about the big stuff and the good stuff. I don't think there's any other place to start, really, than with new God of War footage, because... God of War Ragnarok. Have I read this right? They revealed it as God of War Ragnarok, but they still didn't 100% confirm it's called God of War Ragnarok.
They revealed it with I think it was a God of War symbol and the word Ragnarok. And they never said, that's the title we're going for. And
I mean, it'd be mad at this point if it isn't, is it?
But genuinely, I think that is the title now, but I genuinely think at the time... They were thinking of another title, so they never confirmed it. And then the entire internet called it God of War Ragnarok, and then it would be insane just for a Google SEO reason to change it.
But my word, does this game look good? And, like, the original now, I said the original, the 2018 game, is firmly in, like, my top two or three games of all time, I think. The more I think about it and the more I replay it, like, unbelievably good game. And just looking at the gameplay footage they showed off in this trailer, it just looks more of the same, but even prettier. And just, I don't know, I just love the varying environments they've got this time around. I think they've said all 9 realms are in this game from Norse mythology. So, I mean, how big is this game going to be?
Big, hopefully.
Yeah, I'm interested in, because obviously this is like, it looks very shortly after the last game. Like, Atreus is
They said a few years.
Yeah,
think,
he's definitely older. But they're doing it so... They're treating this so much as a follow-up to the last game that how do you... Apart from the fact that he's definitely going to have... Seemingly definitely going to have the axe and the chains the whole time.
Yeah.
how do you account for his powers? Like, do they just strip you of the powers? Is there a reason for it? Like, is there the classic Metroid thing where someone comes along and takes all his powers away and
I think you just build upon them. I don't know.
Batman did this, didn't it? In Arkham City, it had to work out how to kind of give you a new power curve. And I think, did that have, like, you could chain things together or something like that? There was definitely another system that it put in so that it didn't totally rob you of every single gadget Batman has. But yeah, it's that thing, right, is that I think what I really want to know about God of War I didn't get out of this trailer. Out of the trailer I got that it still looks amazing and that it's the game that I love getting more of it. I think what I really, the things I actually want to know are, how is this game different? What are the new mechanics that this game is going to have? But I know that that will, well, yeah, there's that. That will come down the line. It's just nice to be given, like, the thing that you know exists, but is the bone that's been waved in front of your face for a while. It's nice to be thrown
I think more than anything to people, I mean, maybe I'm just projecting from my point of view, I was just happy there was, like, a good 3 minutes of gameplay. I was like, not just another it's coming tease. Like, this is properly being built and makes me think it's not too big a shout to say it's coming some point next year.
Oh, they've said it's coming next year. Like, it's...
Well, they also said it was coming this year. So...
Yeah, but, but then you don't go, it's coming this year, and then go, it's coming next year, and then it's like, unless they really fucked up. I'm pretty positive this will be out by next Christmas.
It just looks so good. I think the things that got me most excited were just, if you know about Norse mythology, some of the characters they introduced. I don't want to kind of, almost don't want to spoil it, especially if you haven't played the original. It kind of spoils reveals for the end of the original. So,
although they did that in the trailer.
I suppose they kind of did.
But yeah, I know your point. Did you watch the post show?
I did, yeah.
Because they repeatedly said this is the end of the Norse saga.
Exactly.
Which,
what? Yeah. I assumed it was a trilogy.
Which I think everyone did.
Which I genuinely said. I love the idea of, because it finishes this story, which obviously, I mean, Ragnarok makes sense for that. But really, what that does is they're not going to give up on God of War at this point. So that just means new mythology in the next game. I'm like, that's fucking exciting. Like, who knows where they're going to go with it. Well, like, honestly, there is a bit of me that wants them to go back to Greece, because I'd love to see that this version of God of War within that setting with, you know, less sex minigames and harpy breasts being shoved in your face. But, like, yeah, I'm kind of...
Sort of, though. You know how kind of God of War was originally developed? It was this whole thing of, like, American companies can't do action games in the way that Japan does. So it was that way to prove, like, yeah, an American company can make something like a Platinum game or whatever. I'd love for it to sort of then go, well, we're going to stomp into your realms now and we're going to, you know, do Chinese mythology or kind of like Japanese folklore or something like that. That
Mate,
would be
if he
really
does Romance of the Three Kingdoms, I'll go fucking wild.
I don't know, yeah, where would... I mean, we're already getting ahead of ourselves, but yeah, there's just so many possibilities. Like, I don't know. I mean, I've always found the Egyptian gods to be the coolest, but there we go.
What if it goes full American gods and goes like present day and he's like fighting media?
I'd be into it. Jeff Bezos.
Why not?
Top of a tower.
Why the hell not?
I mean, it just looks fantastic. I don't think there's much more to really say about it other than I just really want to play this game.
It's very rare that I see a game get announced that looks exactly like how I imagined it. And with almost no surprises, and I come out of it being like, yeah, fucking brilliant. Like, I'm just happy there's more of
this. Thor just sounds and looks good. They didn't really show Thor in the trailer, but they released concept art afterwards, and he just looks amazing.
Yeah,
he's
great. He's a lad.
And interesting, I think that one of the other big headlines from this was that Cory Barlog isn't actually directing the game. He's obviously heavily involved as creative director of the studio, but they've actually passed the torch on to, I've completely forgotten
Eric
name.
Williams.
Eric Williams, yeah. So yeah, that's interesting. They kind of like to get a fresh perspective each time.
That he's worked on literally every God of War game before. Like, also, did you see that tweet going around? Like, the first thing Cory Barlog tweeted in 2020 was, remember the name Eric Williams.
He knew
which
what
is,
he was doing.
Which is really nice. Like, that must be lovely. So, like, I'm into it. I'm ready.
Yep. I mean, that was something we were expecting. Now on to some things maybe we... Well, some we definitely weren't expecting, and some we maybe thought we might see. Mm. I was kind of half thinking we would see a Spider-Man 2
yeah,
teaser.
Yeah, I had a similar vibe.
And I thought it would be something like that, just because I know a lot of people have been like, oh, they just released two games in a year. But that also means they're very prolific, and they like to get through these games. They have the engines built, and they're going to make more. And they teased Venom, played by the original Candyman.
Yeah.
What a piece of casting that is.
It's amazing. Do we want to cover Wolverine after this, or are we going to cover these together?
Yeah, let's go. Well, let's do them together, the Insomniac double act, because did it the right way around, didn't they? So everyone's like, oh, Insomniac Marvel. Yeah.
Can I tell you what I did when that happened? Because I was sitting with Anna, and I'd been like, I really think they might show Spider-Man during this, and I really like those Spider-Man games a lot. And the thing came up, and I was like, Spider-Man, yes! And got all excited, and I was like, ready to see him. And then the fucking Wolverine thing happened, and I had no other response than to just go, I was just so taken aback. I had no intellectual response. It was just pure surprise. Who knows what this game is, and who knows when this is coming out? If Spider-Man 2 is 2023, like, you know.
Yeah, it just said in development, didn't it? I mean, I kind of, when they showed the bar, I was like, well, this doesn't look very Spider-Man-y. It looks a little...
Well, that's a Madripoorian bar by the look of it.
Oh, there we go. Mm. And then they showed the guy at the gym. I was like, are they doing Wolverine? Like, when I saw something about the checkered shirt being at a bar, I was like, that looks like Wolverine to me. Then they showed the blood on the fist. I was like, there's metal about to come out of those hands, isn't there? And what came out of the hands, Matt? Some metal.
Well, adamantium.
Exactly. As an elevator pitch, Insomniac making a Wolverine game just sounds right now, doesn't it?
Got to be a very different game for Spider-Man, because he's just not anywhere close to the way that Spider-Man plays or even engages with the rest of the world.
It feels like there's two different opportunities here, right? Like, there's a single-player linear narrative game with Wolverine, you know, maybe kind of building on how they, like, the structure of Ratchet and Clank, if not the... You know, maybe you have like hub areas or something, so that it's a little more limited. Or the kind of wilder part of my brain is like Wolverine on his big fucking motorbike, like Days Gone style Wolverine.
Days Gone Wolverine.
In rural environments, just slashing people up. Like that bit in Logan where they're running through the woods.
It'd be interesting to go if they go the hard... It's hard with a Wolverine game to not go for, like, the 18, like, violent approach, isn't it?
Especially
like, slashing people's faces off.
Especially given the only Wolverine game people actually, like, was that thing. I would be surprised. And it's not, like, you know, obviously Insomniac's made its name... Well, not made its name, but changed its name in recent years as quite a wholesome game maker. Mm-hmm. But they've got, like, gory shit in their back catalogue. You know, like, Resistance wasn't exactly lovely. I could see, you know, I could see them doing something grittier if they wanted to. But I guess it's also whether being associated with the Marvel of now versus the Marvel of a few years ago, whether you're allowed to take it that direction.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, Wolverine and Clank sounds like a good game. Just Clank.
I would love to see how much he fucking hated Clank.
It would be a bit like the start of The Last of Us when Joel just...
I tell you what, though, you say that, like, you know how there's the interplay between Ratchet and Clank? Like, they have, like, little things that they can do to help each other. If there's just a mission where you've got... why is his name gone? The metal Russian guy.
Colossus.
Colossus, yeah. If there's a mission where you can do it with him and he can pick you up and do a fastball special with you and just hurl you through the sky.
Do you think... I mean, they'll obviously be in the same universe, but do you think Spider-Man will appear in this game?
I feel like... maybe we're just kind of conditioned now on a Marvel level to think of these things as all connected, but... Is it all building up to an X-Men game and then just a massive Insomniac Marvel game? Like, are they basically in a few years' time, once Square Enix's Avengers eventually probably dies, are they going to go, right, here's our Avengers game, which is the game pretty much people wanted?
Honestly,
I don't know.
I feel like the Avengers game thing is just out the window at this point. I don't think you can... I think it's tainted. That name in games is now just... It's associated. But it's X-Men game, 100% makes sense. Like, you could still get away with that.
Yeah, you could also get away with individual Avengers characters that you then just put together in a, rather than calling it like Insomniac's Marvel's Avengers or whatever, you just give it, you know how like Midnight Suns is an event?
Yeah.
You just, you call the game an event name and just have everybody in it.
Honestly, I think it's only a few years until we get a Defenders game. Like, bring back those characters that Netflix kind of, you know, eventually fucked
Daredevil
up.
And,
like,
is perfect for a game.
Exactly.
Absolutely like, perfect.
Yeah, and they've they've already hinted at him in that Spider-Man universe and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, come on, put him
I'm
in.
I'm calling it now, bookmark it. In the year 2028, we will get a Insomniac Civil War.
Come on. Go on, then.
Yeah, bookmark it, and everyone can go, you're right, or eventually in 5 years, or 7 years even, just go, you're
right. Why do you keep saying bookmark it about a podcast?
I don't know, bookmark it. Bookmark the podcast. Bookmark. Put it in your back pocket. Save it for a rainy day. Best briefly about Spider-Man 2.
Is it co-op? That's my big question.
I don't know if it's co-op. I think they'll do the GTA switch between characters.
I can see that.
Thing. Although, you know what? Co-op would be very fun for that game also.
Yeah.
I like the idea of being able to like do tug of wars with people between your two different whip threads.
I wonder if like, I wonder if that is what the, because obviously they kind of, they did the glow up for Spider-Man onto PS5 already, and I wonder if now you have that built in, and given that, you know, the city itself, the structure of that city is going to stay similar, so you don't have to. Notionally, you don't have to do as much work. I know that's ignoring a huge number of development factors, but notionally, the structure is in place. They know what they're going to do with that. So maybe it is a case if you can pour more resources into, like, how does this work as a co-op game? You know, technologically, how do we make that feasible? But also, we have yet to see, like, a proper, like, AAA open world game that lets you do online co-op where you're in different places in the city at different, you know, and that kind of thing. Like, I would love, I'd love the idea of, you know, you could jump into my game as Miles and I'm Peter and we're swinging around different places doing different missions, but we're just in the same place. And then you go, you get like a call to a villain breaking out somewhere and go there together. Like, that's
that
a
would
proper
also
fantasy.
Allow you to fundamentally, there's always that scene, whether it's in a comic book or if it's a movie, where like there's a team up and suddenly like this bridge is collapsing, but the villain's over there and they have to split up. Like the idea of then you having like a freeze frame moment where it's like, which of you are going to go and save the kids and which of you are going to chase down the boss?
Yeah. The other question is, Venom, is he playable?
Yeah. Oh,
I think he's a villain, isn't he?
I'd imagine
like,
villain.
Frame him as a villain.
But you could... Like,
you don't cast Candyman and he's not a villain.
No, but he's also like... Is it like play as Venom in sections of the story or something? Like he acts maybe so much like Spider. Like that's such a thing.
Yeah.
That the idea of not allowing you. I mean, maybe it gets. Maybe it's like a symbiote suit thing. Like I mean, I'm sure that will happen. That always happens.
I'll have to be reminded. It's very vague spoilers for the end of the original Spider-Man. But
what?
Is it Osborn? Is it Carnage? They were teasing him.
Yeah, no, it was Venom. It? What? No,
was it
what?
Venom?
But wasn't Venom? Wasn't there a symbiote being attached to?
Yeah, didn't he
Harry
have
like
a symbiote lab in his house?
I'm pretty sure that's right.
Was that Carnage or Venom?
Very much assume that the green tank thing was setting up a Green Goblin-y sort of deal, but
I'm pretty sure there was a symbiote.
I'm looking.
I don't know,
out,
but
mate.
We haven't. Surely Green Goblin's appearing in this one. You can't have three games and Green Goblin doesn't turn up for Spider-Man, can you?
That would be lovely.
Get Willem Dafoe back. We all want it. I think Wolverine and Spider-Man 2, they confirmed is PS5 only. God of War, interestingly, is PS4 and PS5. Same with Horizon. I'm actually kind of glad we didn't see any Horizon because I don't need to see any more Horizon. I'm sold on it. I'm going to play that game. I know what it is.
I remain basically indifferent, as I have been
I
about
saw a lot
all
of
Horizon
people being,
stuff.
Exactly. I saw a lot of people being quite snarky of, oh, another Deathloop trailer, but I got it. The game's out in like 3 days. They're going to put a trailer for it.
Yeah.
Because they want it to sell. that's
Xbox
how
One.
These things work.
Yeah, the Xbox One had a Psychonauts trailer in it the day before.
Exactly.
Psychonauts
You've got to advertise a game that's out in 3 days because that's pretty much all Sony have for the rest of the year. So, you know, they want to make money for it. I think a big one for a lot of people, this one doesn't have a place in my heart, but I want it to, is they opened with the big KOTOR remake, Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, which is one of those games, as with all BioWare games, it seems to me, just pass me by. I unfortunately know the big twist in this game, but I don't feel that that'll ruin it for me, because I'm gonna definitely play this game. I did try and play it about 3 years ago, but I can see why they're doing a remake, I'll put it that way, because that is not an easy game to play now, I don't think.
That's an old you fucking both, game.
Yeah, you both have a real soft spot for this game, I believe.
Great game. Hilariously, as we were saying earlier, released as an Xbox exclusive back in the day, and now it's a PlayStation 5 exclusive.
I think they said, is it timed exclusive? So, well, probably be, I don't know, those in the past sometimes been up to a year, haven't they? So,
but Forspoken is at least 2 years as a console launch. Okay. As a console exclusive,
we'll get onto
so
that soon. But yeah, not much more to really say about KOTOR. How much do you think they'll change it? Do you think they'll do full, like, Resi changing the gameplay?
Final Fantasy VII,
change it?
I think, like,
the original is turn-based, isn't it?
Real-time with pause is essentially what it is.
It's kind of like First Dragon Age, right? Like, to an extent.
I mean, it literally is based on, I'm fairly sure it's D&D rule set 3.5, which is what they use for the Baldur's Gate games. So it essentially, like, the combat goes in real time, but then you pause it and then you line up, you queue up attacks for your characters to do, and then you let them do them. But this has to be something closer to Mass Effect, in my eyes, that you have, like, all of those powers that you had from KOTOR, or at least analogs of them, but you also are allowed to go and hit things with a lightsaber or shoot them with a gun.
That's what people want. Yeah. They want to use the lightsabers.
I am really interested to see how they deal with the combat in this, because I think that has aged out a little bit. So, but I think it could be... You don't, like... Tactical lightsaber gameplay is something I'm just into the idea of, and I want someone to do well, especially after Jedi Fallen Order made lightsabers seem like shit. So, I'm ready for that. Nice. I think it should just look lovely as well. I'm glad they've said it's a full,
like ground up.
It's a full remake. It's not a remaster, which I think were the rumors originally. I'm into it.
Not much more to say about that one, really. Then it will look lovely, probably. Forspoken. So I wasn't really... First couple of times they showed off this game, I wasn't really that into it. But that latest trailer did grab me quite a bit. I didn't realise it was quite as... Almost like an old school Disney movie in a way. It's like someone from the modern world is pulled into a fantasy world and they have to save the kingdom. It kind of reminded me of, like... It reminded me, really, of Return to Oz, which I think we mentioned a few weeks ago. I'm just into... I'm not completely sold... On the combat, that's generally not my cup of tea, that sort of action. But, Joe, I imagine this is your alley straight up.
Yes, please. When I saw, because Forspoken, I've been the same. I've been like, oh, it looks really nice. But beyond that, the story never quite got me. And, like, I don't think we'd seen much. I don't give a shit about dragons and stuff generally. Just something about that setup, like the fish out of water thing, I didn't think all the jokes landed, but it was like, I like that it has a kind of zippy sense of humor. It feels very not Japanese RPG, which I kind of like, I expected it to be a bit, I'm sure it will get into some wild Final Fantasy bullshit somewhere down the line, but I like, yeah, exactly. Nomura's going to come in and look and be like, put fucking Buzz Lightyear in it, Jesus. But I like that there's a different vibe to it, but in a similar looking world, it feels quite like, not anachronistic, but it feels interesting that those things have been put together. And then, yeah, that action, when I saw that, like, the different kinds of magic and how they seem to be comboing and that kind of stuff, like, that is so far up my street. And I'm really hoping it's not tied to, like... I really like the Final Fantasy VII Remake combat. I hope it's a proper action game. I want it to be, like, a fully fledged one.
Well, it reminds me a lot more of Final Fantasy XV's combat, that kind of, like, the way in XV you'd be able to hurl your sword and then... The teleport animation would do that thing where it'd turn you into particles and pull you to the sword. There's a lot of that to it, which obviously, you know, it's Square Enix. It's the Luminosity Studio, is it?
Luminous, yeah.
Like, there's all that kind of lineage there.
This is the Final Fantasy XV team minus the director, because I don't know why he left. There was some weirdness.
But yeah, there's lots of that. And I must say the humour does land for me. Like that first trailer where it's like, is that a motherfucking dragon or whatever she said? Like that was already kind of like, okay, I think I'm going to be into this. Mm. But seeing anything that has like that ability to zip from rooftop to rooftop while firing spells off and stuff like that, that has a power fantasy for me that I really like.
I also love, there's this one thing they said a while back. It was I think it's the biggest performing story we've done on IGN about Forspoken, and it was them saying, we want this to have the highest quality visuals of any open world game ever made. And it's like, if you're going in with that as your idea, it's like, I mean, it is a proper put up or shut up type situation, but if they pull it off, like, I love that ambition. It's such
a
cool
thing
to go in. It looks
very nice. I'll give it to them. They're on the right track.
Yeah.
I was actually expecting Final Fantasy 16 at the showcase and not Forspoken. I'm surprised. They kind of announced that. They revealed it almost a year ago now, is it? And I've kind of said nothing since.
I think there's a good chance we'll see it at Tokyo Game Show. So I don't think it'll be long before we see it, really. But yeah, I agree. It's like, it was an odd thing to like drop and just leave behind.
Yeah. Especially considering that trailer wasn't just a teaser, it was like, that was a full-on, like, here are cinematics from our game.
Yeah, and gameplay and everything. Mm-hmm. Yeah, TGS sounds right, and so it's still got the Game Awards this year, so it's still got a couple of things coming up. But yeah, I was actually, like, the look of Final Fantasy 16, but we won't talk about that, because they didn't show it, and we're only talking about things they showed. What they did show was more Ghostwire Tokyo, which, if Forspoken doesn't look like a Japanese game, then Ghostwire Tokyo most definitely does look like a Japanese game. Yeah. It's, of course, from Shinji Mikami of Resi fame.
Not that you tell. It looks absolutely
nothing. Doesn't look... It's... I don't know.
Goofy,
I know
we started with moaning.
I'm not moaning. This just... I don't know. I see a lot of people going mad about this game. And I'm not getting it. I don't know. There's something about it, for me, that doesn't look... great. I don't know what it is.
I love the concept and I love the setting. I don't know what the action looks odd, but it may be the same thing we talked about this. Like, it may be the same thing as Deathloop, where it's like it can't communicate how it feels on screen. Maybe all that magic stuff really works, but I agree. Like, there's something a bit stiff about how it all seems to move right now, and maybe that's just because everything has to be like a precise, you know, like action game movement. But yeah, there's something that's not quite there for me. But I do really like that storyline, and I like that it's like drawing in like old school Japanese, like oni, like mythology stuff. I think that's cool.
I'm still not sure the tone. Are they going for full? Are they going to try and make it very scary, or is it going to get a bit silly? Because I think fundamentally, just looking at it, it looks a little bit silly.
He's previously said it's not a horror game. So I think there's a knowingness to it.
I think to me, it almost looks like, which is funny considering there was one of these at Microsoft as well, but it looks like Magic Doom to a degree. Mm. Like, Doom obviously is a bit horror because it's set in hell and has demons, but it's not frightening. It's just about blasting the shit out of things with big shotguns. Mm. And this looks the same, but you're blasting the shit out of ghosts with magic spells and cards, which if the dual sense stuff works well to convey that sense of magic in your hands, then it could be good. But animation-wise, it definitely is a bit goofy, which I think I like, even though it looks weird.
Like, this is one of those games that I will 100% play. Like, It looks so weird, and it's got such a lineage of talent behind it that it kind of demands to be played. But I'm more mixed on it than the rest.
Well, it might be the last Bethesda game you ever play on a PlayStation console. A couple more things to go. We're going to actually go with GTA next, because they showed GTA again, which I'm actually really looking forward to playing GTA 5 again.
Me too.
It's been a long time, and it's just a brilliant game. I don't really need more reasons than that. It's actually not coming till, is it February now?
March.
It was March.
But it was meant to be
coming in November. Yeah, and I was looking forward to playing that at the end of the year. I thought that'd be a nice little replay at Christmas or something.
Honestly, given the list of games we're about to talk about after this, I can wait. Like, fucking hell, it's too much.
But I was kind of a little bit... well, maybe I built up in my head how much better it was going to look on PS5. But I looked in, I thought, this just looks like the PS4 version.
But do you remember
harsh on it.
Do you remember the first time you played the PS4 version? And to me, it was less about like, oh, the characters look way better or the animation looks way better. It's just that the way that world sticks together and like the lighting effects pulling it all together and giving it that sheen. I don't think we got a good sense of that. And like, I do think the same thing could happen here, where once you step back into Los Santos and see it at night and it's all pulled together with new visual effects. Like, I think that could be amazing.
I think the thing that got me most excited was when they just teased the seamless switch in between characters like that happen in a second on PS5. Because I don't know if you remember the original PS3 version. It would take a good few seconds to switch between the characters.
A few seconds
each time.
Is more. Putting it mildly. Yeah. It's like almost a fucking minute.
But I'm going to play that game again.
Yeah, me too. Like, I haven't played that campaign since, 2013? So, it's been a fucking long time.
That game's going to be 9 years old when it comes out again. But I will play it again. Will I get into GTA Online this time? I've tried so many times. It's not going to happen, I think. I've just got to admit it to myself. It's not happening. But finally, the biggest thing that I think we all saw coming, Radiohead on PS5.
Yeah, that's what we were looking
for. Bizarre thing, because I think we both had different, well, we all have different stories of when this popped up on the stream. I know I originally started and I was like, is this Remedy? It looks a bit Remedy like. I was like, is this Control 2 they're teasing? So it's the big red lights. And then a song started playing. I was like, Schmidt, I know this song. And I was like, this is Radiohead. It's not like Radiohead to put their song on a trailer for a game. Like, we already had Baby Metal earlier in the show. I was like, that's enough for me. I was like, what game is this? Like, have Remedy got Radiohead? And it just popped up. Radiohead, Kid Amnesia. What's the easiest way to say it? Kid Amnesia.
Yeah.
It's basically they're re-releasing 2 21-year-old albums, Kid A and Amnesiac. And they were just releasing those on vinyl and stuff, and with some bonus tracks. And now there's a playable PS5 experience of those two albums. I'm not really sure what's going on.
It feels like it's like an art installation, which I guess they've done stuff with, like, Nigel Godrich's art before. Mm-hmm. Let's get into Pitchfork Corner, baby. So it wouldn't surprise me, you know, like, I have a copy of Kid A that they released, and it's like a kid's, like, those cardboardy kids books, and it's got all of Nigel Godrich's art coming through it. Like, I could see that kind of being put into a virtual space, but it's just I thought it was Silent Hill. Like, when it popped up, that giant metal pyramid in the middle, I was like, oh, fuck. Like, this is some, like, bizarre Silent
Johnny
Hill pyramid
Greenwood
shit.
Yeah, scoring Silent Hill is the dream.
Yeah, and then, absolutely bonkers. But, like, it's out in November. I'm really excited.
I mean, they said they weren't putting any PSVR stuff. That makes sense. This would make sense to me if it's just PSVR, basically just listening to the album with loads of stuff going on around you. Like, I don't know. Are we going to review this for IGN? I already asked Dan Soberton. I was like, can I review Kid A for IGN? Like, I'm not worried about Amnesiac because I don't think Amnesiac is that good, personally.
I agree.
But if I just review Kid A and just go 10 out of 10 done, yeah. Like, is that it?
That's it. As a Radiohead fan, you can't give Kid A what in any form less than masterpiece. So what are you going to do? Like,
exactly. It's like, I mean, it's a boring app, but it's got Kid A in it. Yeah.
So it's the best game soundtrack of all time.
Very interested. I'm intrigued. I want to know what the hell that is. And what a bizarre thing to have in a showcase.
It's brilliant. I mean, it's the most, like, antique PlayStation type announcement. Like, that's proper PS2 era PlayStation shit.
Yeah. And I realise, like, there's a lot of people out there that there's a lot of people actually that vehemently seem to dislike Radiohead. Go with it. They seem to be, I think, very unfairly put in the same, like, kind of bracket as Coldplay, which is just, come on, guys.
Well, that's absurd.
And
obviously,
even early Coldplay's fine. So, you know, get over it.
Parachute's a good album, lads.
Exactly. Rush Above the Head, also good. But yeah, I realised that if you don't like Radiohead, you're probably just rolling your eyes all the way through this. But, and to be fair, if it was any other music, if it was like, I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of band people like. Exactly. Well, Hardfi. If it was Hardfi.
Man, imagine if Living for the Weekend came on, but all the same visuals.
Razorlight, I don't know, someone. Just like on PS5, I'd be like, what is this? What's going on? What a waste of time. But because it happens to be one of who I think are the greatest bands ever, I'm going, this is fantastic. Yeah.
No, I totally get that, but, you know, live with it.
Yeah, exactly.
We're going to
We're
going to do a spoiler cast. We're going to come on to a full Kid A spoiler cast when it comes out in November.
Amazing. Can we do a live stream of it?
Yeah.
Let's Play, everything. God, the DMCA stuff on that's going to be a nightmare.
Oh, yeah, shit.
Good stuff. I think that's all we're going to talk about from the PlayStation Showcase. There were a few other little bits. There was that weird little game where you turn into animals.
Chia. Yeah. It just looks like they... For a second, I was like, is this what Wild is now? Did they just delete Wild and put the turning into animals thing into this cartoon game? That game looked lovely, except for the character models, which I thought looked like shit. And I didn't understand how it was put together. Anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's all the big stuff, because, frankly, we've got so many things to talk about, because this week has been mad. There's about 55 games come out this week. We're going to talk about 5 good ones here, plus there's some film stuff going on. Let's talk about the film stuff, because not only yesterday was there a big old PlayStation Showcase, but the first trailer for The Matrix Resurrection drops, and it's surprisingly good.
Yeah, I am so tedious about how much I love The Matrix. There's my Matrix poster in the background right there. And like, I'm also equally, if not more so, tedious about how much I think the sequels are shit. And I can't believe that this made me excited for this film. I watched it, I was like, I mean, it might have something to do with the fact that, like, half of that trailer is basically reshoots from the original film. But I'm into it. And I don't know what the fuck it's about, which is great.
Mm-hmm. I'm into it. I don't think I'm going as mad as a lot of people, but then I tend to don't go as mad as a lot of people on most things. But I would say I'm cautiously optimistic. I think it looks good.
Oh, yeah.
At least I didn't watch the trailer and go, this looks bad, which is a good sign, because that easily could have happened. I'm intrigued in it. I'm just very wary of where that's... It looks like they're very heavily leaning on the first film. They obviously can't ignore the second, especially the end of the third, because that's kind of just, you know, you can't ignore that. And I will have to rewatch the second and third ones,
I think too,
unfortunately.
Sadly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you seen the two mad theories going around about it? So that,
I think I've seen one. I don't know if I've seen two.
So there's one that Lawrence Fishburne's not in it because of canon events in The Matrix Online.
The Matrix Online.
What? Because The Matrix Online was canon Matrix storytelling. And during the course of one of those events, Morpheus was killed. And so they think, like, this is a reborn Morpheus somehow, whatever. He got plugged back in The Matrix or something. The other mad one is, in one of those shots, there is a projected screen showing a shot from the original Matrix movie. It's the bit where Neo's got the mirror going up his neck. And that literal film shot is in the background. So there's some chat about, is this new Matrix a world in which the Matrix exists?
Is there a Matrix within a Matrix? Is that what we're talking about?
And also, because the thing that's sticking... This is my own headcanon theory bullshit now. You know in the first Matrix where Cypher is asking to be re-plugged in and forget everything because he wants to become an actor? He's like, I want to be someone important, like an actor. It feels like Neo's life in that thing. He's got like a beautiful bathroom where he sits with a little rubber duck on his head. So is this going to be a world where he's the actor that plays Neo in The Matrix and they're showing The Matrix in that world? Lord. So is he Keanu Reeves in The Matrix Resurrection?
I suppose they never refer to anyone by name, do they? And
it would be...
Does that make...
Amazingly meta if it happened. It would be so weird.
If you're going to reboot the series, why not go all out?
Just
and
go
do
fucking
something
bonkers.
Mad.
I'm like being John Malkovich, but it's The Matrix.
Because yeah. I was only 7 when the original came out, so I didn't watch it till probably 5 years after that and did absolutely love it. But I think I missed the whole cultural moment at the time of... I think people forget how huge this movie was and like... how different it was. Like, we've had a lot of sci-fi blockbusters since then, but this one was just I think almost Christopher Nolan gets a lot of the credit for like the intelligent blockbuster, whereas this was quite a few years before and arguably smarter than a lot of them.
Genuinely, like, I did a course at uni that covered like different phases of Hollywood, and like my professor on that course made a point of saying, like, The Matrix is a turning point in action cinema. Like, this is the film that did it. And so, and I totally subscribe to that idea. Like, this is so different to what we had before. And, like, we don't have the current culture without it. Like, I don't think we have the MCU without this film. So, like, yeah, it's kind of...
I think it's unfortunate what's happened since, because it's almost like... I don't know if you could ever fully tarnish that original film, because it is just...
It's
brilliant.
Impossible.
But everything since kind of... The Matrix did kind of become a bit of a joke for a good few years. It's like, let's laugh at The Matrix, whereas the original is so good. And you know what? I think The Path of Neo is a very good game.
I never played The Path of Neo. I only ever played Enter the Matrix, which was...
Enter the Matrix I had a great time with,
So I wanted the opposite. I wanted Path of Neo where you just had all the mad slowdown powers and everything, and that's what you got.
Honestly, my main worry with this is, like... If you go back and watch The Matrix now, it's so grimy, like, everywhere. Even the real world looks like shit. Like, everywhere's concrete and just, like, rain, and everyone looks a bit wet and dirty.
It's going to be too glossy.
Well, that trailer looks so shiny and so neat. And that may be purposeful, like, the new Matrix, whatever he's plugged into, is a shiny place or whatever. But it does look... Mm-hmm. notably different to those original films, and I'm hoping it's not just because it's like we pumped way more money into this.
I think there's something about the 90s, because it's that tipping point between realistic real sets and CG, right? Like, it's come off the 80s where visual effects are becoming bigger, but there's still a lot of physical sets, and the way that they're filmed with, like, actual celluloid at that point gives them, like, that very grainy sort of texture. And it's the sort of texture that you expect a Christopher Nolan film to have, but it isn't. His films are always very sharp. And there is something about the look of The Matrix that I think works. It feels so oppressive because of that heavy film grain, and because everything is very clunky and real in the sets. And yeah, I do worry, like, because things like Avengers don't have any of that because of, like, modern filmmaking, and I hope they don't lose that.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I love Yahya Abdul-Mateen as well, and I think he will be fantastic, but I do kind of... I don't know, a lot of The Matrix to me is Lawrence Fishburne's Morpheus and Hugo Weaving's Agent Smith just being incredible. I want Agent Smith back.
Here's a question. Have they given Yahya Abdul-Mateen fake acne scars to make him look more like Lawrence Fishburne?
I don't know if we just not seen him properly.
There's one shot where I was like, there's some light on his face, and I'm like, I can't tell what... it's kind of odd. Like, to an extent, I know Lawrence Fishburne will be sad that he's not in this movie, because, obviously. But if I was Lawrence Fishburne and I was being... the young me was being cast by Yahya Abdul-Mateen, I'd be like, well, that is delightful. Like, Big Dick Dr. Manhattan is me. That's amazing.
I don't think... it's out in Christmas. It's not that long away. We had to wait a long time for a trailer. It's only, what, 3 months away now? So
yeah, baby.
That'll be a lovely Christmas treat, won't it?
Well, it's either going to be a lovely Christmas treat, or it's going to be absolute shite and we'll talk loads of shit about it. And I'm fine with both of those things. So that's
exactly. Fine. Yeah. We'll enjoy it either way. One film you have seen, Joe, that I don't think me and Matt have seen yet. I say I don't think. I know I haven't seen it. Is Shang-Chi.
Yeah, baby.
Is the Legend of the Ten Rings?
Legend of the Ten Rings.
That's right, isn't it?
I loved this film. I went in with very tepid expectations. I was just out and about, and my girlfriend was like, "You want to go to the cinema?" I was like, "Yeah, cool." And we just popped in. And it's one of those moments where you go in, you sit down, and then you're like, from like minute one, I just fucking loved it. It feels really different. The main thing I'll say is, the trailers up until like the launch day trailers do a really good job of not telling you what this film is about or where it goes. I would recommend you don't watch the latest ones. Like, the launch day trailers they were putting on Instagram and stuff, like, give away loads of weird shit, and I don't know why they did that. But it's a film that goes to like quite strange, unexpected places. The central relationship between Simu Liu and Awkwafina's characters is like adorable. Like, they are so much fun to watch, like, hang out together, and you can tell they've both done like proper comic roles before. And the choreography just makes like Black Widow in particular look like absolute toilet. Like, it's mad. You just watch it, like, I can't believe that a film ago we were watching people just kind of roll about and kick each other in the legs. And then that bus scene that they've showed in trailers is A, really long, and B, fucking brilliant. Like, so much happens in it. And it's, I had such a nice time with it, and it was so unexpected. And I'm delighted that, like, this character is, or these characters are now part of the Marvel Universe, because seeing them bounce off some of those established characters will be, like, brilliant. Mm-hmm. It'll be so nice. Yeah. Like, I genuinely,
I can't wait.
I can't believe how much I'm recommending it to people, but yeah, I've not stopped thinking about it. I think it's great.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to go see it soon. I just haven't had time, frankly. Yeah. But yeah, it's weird. We're not used to having to go to cinema to see a film, are we? And having no other way of seeing it.
Well, and it's also done so well now that they've apparently, like, Eternals is definitely theatrical only as well. So they're like, mm-hmm. they're leaning into that now. I will say, like, I'm sure some people will write in and be like, oh, it goes a bit Marvel movie, which obviously it does. It would be insane if it didn't. I actually thought the way this went a bit Marvel movie was really fun. But yeah, I think it's one of those things. It's really good fun. It's a really nice time.
There we go. Maybe we'll talk about it more once other people have seen it. Yeah. You've also been playing a game though, Joe. It's time to get into all the games we've been playing, and there's some good games here, I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's kick off first with the new WarioWare, Joe.
Yeah, WarioWare.
Term WarioWare man, you love the little mini micro games, even though you love the little. Smaller, like, the better. That's what you say.
Yeah, that's my motto. That's what I think about phones. It's what I think about doors. Everything. Smaller the better.
Doors.
Yeah, I've got a doll's house door instead of a normal front door. It's fucking painful, but I love it. WarioWare getting together is like a weird thing because ultimately, I think it's probably not a good WarioWare game in the grand scheme of things, but also, it is a WarioWare game, and thus I love it. It's kind of weird. It's short, for a start. The story mode is, like, over very quickly, and it doesn't feel like it has the sort of... The WarioWare I remember best is the original Game Boy Advance one. It was original on Game Boy. I think it was that. And that just felt like it went on forever, like you were constantly unlocking new stuff and new modes. Mm-hmm. And this one, that process ends quite quickly. Like, I think I had everything after about 3 or 4 hours, more or less. Maybe a few outstanding minigames that I hadn't played or something. But just that formula doesn't ever get worse for me. I love those micro games. I love the silliness of it. And, like, there's so many. It's like a... The thing is that it's all designed to be funny or weird. And so there's, like, a punchline every 4 seconds. Like, I took so many screenshots playing, just being like, what the fuck was that? Like, weird illustrations. And it just feels like they put Nintendo's, like, most bizarre artists on WarioWare and just let them go. So you get, like, these bonkers drawings of Wario that are apparently his, like, self-image, and just him with, like, crazy muscles, or, like, him as, like, a Renaissance painting and stuff. And it's just, like, it's so fun to, like, dip through. And then there's a whole section of Nintendo games as well, or, like, Nintendo reference games that are themselves great. Like, there's a Fire Emblem Three Houses one, there's a Breath of the Wild one, there's, like, a Donkey Kong Country Returns one, and, like, just lots of... If you're a Nintendo fan, it feels like a little feast, that section. And I think that's where they could have done way more, to be honest. But it's also designed as a multiplayer game and kind of fails a little bit at that. The multiplayer minigames that they've included aren't all that great. And they've done this thing where, for the first time in the series, you choose characters, and every character controls very differently. So some characters are completely stationary, but they can, like, fire projectiles, and other characters can only attack in one direction and stuff like that. So you have to kind of put together teams that are best placed to complete the specific games you're doing. And that kind of works in the story mode, but once you get into the mini games, like, I think it was Tom put up a video of the volleyball mini game, and it's just 4 people playing with the same dude who can fire projectiles at high speed. And so the ball just disappears, like, it never comes down. And it's like, they just didn't think about this. Like, this doesn't work. It is a broken thing. So it's kind of odd.
So, like, once you So do you have any desire to pick it back up once you've done it? Like, you've done your 3 hours. Are you still playing?
Played a bit more. Like, you can do that stuff where it's like, you can replay all the story modes and unlock more things, and then every single micro game has like a pass rate, so you can there's like a huge list of challenges, so it's got its own kind of achievements list built in, so there's a lot to like tool about with. I could see myself kind of on a tube journey picking it up, playing a few micro games, putting it down again, but certainly in terms of like that dedicated I'm going to play this for a few hours, like that's definitely wilted a bit since I finished the story.
Because it is a £40 game. Is there enough there to, I don't know.
I mean, I don't think it's egregious. I think especially if you are going to play it with other people, I don't think it's like beyond the pale. Like,
okay.
But it's also, you know, you have to think about this in the context of Nintendo games. Like, they price wildly for stuff. And frankly, I'm surprised they didn't make this a £60 game. And I know that's not a reason to celebrate, but it is like, at least there's some kind of, some kind of thought being put in there. So it's not like it's not the grand return to WarioWare I wanted it to be, but I've certainly had a really nice time with it. And if you are just a fan of that series, it's more of that, and we haven't had that for a while, so that's great.
Nice. It's something I might pick up on sale, not that, you know, Nintendo games.
Yeah, you'll be waiting absolutely years.
Yeah, you know, I'll play that in 2028 when Insomniac's Civil War comes out. What else have we got? You've both been playing the new Life is Strange 2 True Colors, which I've heard pretty much non-stop glowing reviews of this game, which has made me want to play it because I've not really been into Life is Strange historically. I've given them a go, but this one, no, it's not about this one that I'm into. Why should I play it?
Because it's nice.
I'm not nice. I don't like nice things.
Like, quite honestly, if you don't like nice, I don't think there's anything in Life is Strange for you to like. But
I mean, there's some horrible bits, but they're surrounded by a lot of nice.
Mm-hmm. Have you finished it now, Joe?
No, I've not even gotten to the end of the first episode, to be honest.
Right, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, historically, Life is Strange kind of, like, are these like, very kind of, like, indie lifestyle sort of tinted kind of versions of a Telltale game, I suppose, in which you go through a character's journey and make big decisions that branch the storylines, and that is generally tinged by the fact that there's quite a lot of tragedy that happens to these poor characters in them, and normally complicated by supernatural powers. Life is Strange Two Colors is a slightly different kind of take on this idea, in that it's still got that very kind of indie loveliness to it, but it's much more of a slice of life kind of game, and therefore that changes a lot of the way that you kind of approach characters and decisions as well. So the storyline is about a girl called Alex who has been in the like foster home system, and now she's old enough to not be in that. So I think I worked out eventually she's about 22, which I think massively helps, because aging up the protagonist means that we don't have any of the awkward slang of the previous games. This is the best written of the entire series by a significant margin.
Even early on, I can tell that. Like, it feels a lot more natural.
Yeah, and there's also, like, there's clearly a lot more money spent on performance capture in this, so all of the kind of small little nuances of conversation are much better conveyed in this than previous, which is good because Alex has a hidden, in inverted commas, superpower, which is that she's very empathetic and can read the kind of emotions of characters around her. And what that leads to is whereas the other characters, like Max in the first game, could literally rewind time to undo horrible things that she accidentally caused to happen. And Life is Strange 2 was much more about trying to keep your kid brother, that is basically Carrie, under control. This is much more about there is a terrible thing kind of happens, and there's a mystery that like runs through the game that you're trying to work out. But that's actually probably only really about a third of the game, and most of it is just trying to find a new home. Like, you've come to this place that your brother's invited you to, and you've not seen your brother for 8 years, and this place is in like the middle of the Colorado mountains, basically. It's just this tiny little town that's got not a huge amount going on, but has a very tight-knit community. And it's about trying to find your place there, which is where this very slice of life kind of feeling comes through. So actually, whereas the previous games were asking you to make quite large decisions that caused the like storyline to branch and move around, and could give you two very different kind of ways of big events turning out. This one is much more about like how your decisions reflect your relationships, which kind of run through the game, as in kind of like the people at the end who are going to turn out to be your, who are the people that are going to be your best friends, who are the community members that are going to remember you for doing nice things for them. So when I was playing it initially, I felt like, oh, none of these decisions are really meaningful. And it's not that they're not meaningful, it's just that they don't have those kind of big surprising branches that they had in the original games. It's much more about who you make an impact on and also who you help, because you can read their emotions and infer what they're feeling, and then that'll unlock new dialogue options which will allow you to forge better connections with people. So it's a much more gentle kind of Life is Strange game than the previous ones, but I think it's kind of tapping into what probably a Life is Strange audience really wants. Like, it feels quite on the money, really, for that community.
I think I'm just fundamentally more likely to play it because it's not a chapterized release this time. It's just all out in one go. You can play it. And I think that's what... I did play the first episode of the original Life is Strange, but then the second episode came out, I was just like, I can't be bothered. Like, if it had all been there day one, I probably would have played it all. I kind of just... Yeah. How long was what? I totally forget the question I was going to ask. How long roughly is it?
It's about 10 hours long. Like, so it's still split up into episodes. It's still a Life is Strange game, as people would know it. It's five episodes that run into each other. They're about, you could probably do them in about an hour and 45, but if you're really into the story, then you'll obviously start reading. Like, there's a diary that Alex keeps between like encounters with different people that she'll fill in with her impressions and song lyrics, because it is that kind of game. Like, if you can't deal with the kind of kooky indie vibes of it, you might find yourself throwing up a bit.
Everything we're saying here is Dale's gonna hate it. And know this. Like, Dale might physically throw up if he played this game.
It's like, to give you the thing, like, when at the very start of the game, it's very much like Alex steps off a bus into this kind of new area, and she goes and stands on a bridge and looks over kind of this incredibly beautiful Colorado kind of like landscape, to which then a Gabrielle Aplin song starts playing off fucking English Rain, like an album that came out like in 2011 or something like that, that's so incredibly like small town English folk that Dale wouldn't just know power of that, he'd like spontaneously combust and fly off into the stuff.
He'd want to jump off that bridge and end the game there, is what we're saying.
Yeah. But I had a really nice time with it. I think like for a while I struggled around the fact that like there wasn't these big branching moments where I was like, holy shit, I fucked up and now like my kid brother is causing a storm, or now I've got to try and work out how to reverse time and make sure an entire town doesn't drown. Like, there's none of that kind of heaviness to it. But I fundamentally like that kind of slice of life element. And what it does is, because it's set in this one town, it's got this kind of thing where you'll do kind of major scenes, but then it'll just let you wander around the high street and just go and check in on people that you quite like and you want to make sure you don't miss out on bits of their story. Which reminds me actually a lot of how in between missions in Mass Effect, you'll walk around the Normandy and just check everyone's all right.
Yeah, you go and do that little route where you visit everyone on every floor. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of like there are some bits of that town that I couldn't stand, like the fact that there's a weed dispensary.
I was going to say, it's like the hippest rural town there's ever been. Like, they've got a record store and a dispensary. Even the old fart who runs the pub is like a wisecracking lad who uses social media. And you're like, this is absolute fantasy. But it's, yeah, even early on, like, I can feel like the vibe is really working for me. The backstory of also the voice acting's really good, and not only have they nailed lip sync, which was always a problem in Life is Strange before, like the facial expressions that they've got, like the so facial animations are amazing. Like, they use them in really nuanced, interesting ways. They're not just like, it's not like I'm saying concerned dialogue and thus I have a concerned face. Like, there are silent moments where you see people make facial expressions that sort of betray their true emotions before they say something. Like, it feels very actorly in like a really impressive way, and in a way that most games do not nail. You can tell like there's a real director behind all this. This is me an hour in, so I'm really interested in seeing where that goes. Yeah, I think it's a very cool step, and I'm into that slice of life thing, like the apocalyptic elements of Life is Strange were never what I liked most anyway.
Yeah,
yeah.
See,
so I did
really like those bits of those games, but I ultimately think like games have to change, right? And there are so many series that never do, and kind of they just get stuck in a rut, and it's like, yeah, you can enjoy going to the same well, and it's still the same flavors that you like, but. Like, as I always find with music, which I guess, you know, makes sense considering Life is Strange is so tied to musical, but the best bands change their albums. Like, album to album, they've got, like, really different things they're exploring. Mm-hmm. And that's just the same, like, I miss those more heavy-feeling changes in the story, but ultimately, like, I think they found, like, the right path for where this series and, like, its fans especially are at the moment. And so, yeah, I think they've done a real good job, and I hope there's a character in this that is in a previous Life is Strange. There's a character called Steph, and she was in Before the Storm. And I quite like the fact that there's just like these little things that remind you, like Life is Strange is a thing in which like people live in the same world. And I kind of like, you know, there are some really good characters in this, like real strong character development. I'd like to hope that maybe they'll turn up as a supporting character in another game.
That'd be cool.
Nice. You just remind me, yeah, it's like all the best bands. When Kid A originally came out, everyone was like, what is this new director? What's going on here? Suddenly, over time, people realised this is a fantastic piece of work.
You'll get some Radiohead in Life is Strange as well.
In the trailer, they did do a Creep cover, didn't they? But yeah. I will say, you know, that song has been covered to absolute death.
Also, it's actually quite a good moment in this. I was genuinely dreading that bit coming up, but it kind of works. I mean, it's still, you know, it's still very Life is Strangey, but it is actually quite a good moment.
It's not a love song, and that's what people often cover.
Well, it is not used in that way here.
Good. The other thing I like about the music in this is, like, obviously the kind of record store is very much a kind of, like, it's for hip people that listen to music before it was cool. But the Kings of Leon album they get is post-Sex on Fire, which means it's not cool.
It's really odd. Very like, because, yeah, that bit is like... Oh yeah, it feels like they went to Kings of Leon and were like, "We want to license this because this feels right for this relationship." Mm-hmm. But then Kings of Leon were like, "Cool, but you can only use one of our later albums, not the ones that people actually liked at the time you're talking about." that was really weird, that moment. Because
remind me though. Go on.
I was just gonna say, if they put on fucking King of the Rodeo, I would have been well in. But no, it was some old bullshit.
Oh. You did remind me, though, I should update people. I finished Mass Effect, all three, the trilogy. It's done. I loved them all. I would say three is the best.
It is the best game. I still think two, I engaged with, like, that group and that story a little bit more, but three, like, the act of playing three is so nice.
I think I engaged with three. Maybe I had the benefit of playing it after all the DLC's been added and stuff, so I had
that's very true. Yeah.
Yeah. I absolutely love that series. Very happy I played them. And I can't wait for the next one. Now I can fully get in on all the hype, which I'm happy about.
When are you going to play Andromeda?
Do you know what? I played the first few hours of Andromeda before I even played any of the trilogy. So I won't be going back to that.
I've still never touched a minute of Andromeda. And maybe I should for educational purposes. But
I've heard it's not terrible. It's just not what anyone wanted.
it's a very 7 out of 10. And even maybe the end dips off. Goes into a 5 out of 10.
There's too many good games to play to do that, as we will further show here. Another game about coming of age in Colorado is The Artful Escape, which seems to be a theme at the moment. This dropped on Xbox Game Pass yesterday. I played the first roughly 2 hours last night, and I'm about halfway through. It's what I wanted from this game, which is it's not really much of a game. You're not doing a lot. Like, you're not doing a lot. You can't really fail, but it's about you basically play as Francis Vendetti, who is the nephew of basically Bob Dylan in this world. His uncle is like the world's most famous folk musician from the 60s or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's basically a young musician about to play his first show, and everyone's expecting him to basically be the second coming of him. And he feels under pressure to be this folk singer. And truth be told, he wants to play different. He wants to be his own artist. He's under that pressure. So what happens is a strange event happens, basically, and you are transported on this mad, psychedelic, like, alien-fueled journey through the stars, essentially, to try and find your own...
Your own
kind of... Yeah, your own sound, your own look. Make yourself, and not your uncle, basically, is what you're trying to do. And it's kind of... it's an absolutely beautiful game to look at. Like, every different scene looks absurdly good, and it's kind of painted in that sort of almost like the Beatles' Yellow Submarine crossed with a bit of like Terry Gilliam, Monty Python stuff as well. Nice. And just, it looks unbelievable. It sounds unbelievable. The music is basically just non-stop psychedelic rock guitar solos and like a bit of jazz rock and a bit of, it's just all mixes up. And it is incredible to just take in. And sometimes, so basically you run through this game just with left or right on the analog stick, as you do in pretty much every game. But then you just hold in the X button and that brings out your guitar and you just start shredding to whatever music is playing. It just plays along to it. So sometimes I was just standing like a really cool landscape, just holding in X, just taking it in because it sounds amazing. And the gameplay doesn't really develop much beyond that so far. I'm only at the halfway point. There's some light platforming where you have to jump over gaps while shredding. And then there's the occasional sort of at the end of the level. They're not really boss battles because you're kind of just playing along with other people, but basically very simple, like memory game stuff, like remembering, like press X, Y, left bumper, X, Y, left bumper, that sort of thing to try and get through the levels. And like I said, it's not the most challenging game in the world, and I don't think it's about the gameplay, and that's not really what I'm playing it for. It's just an incredible thing to look at and take in, kind of a bit like what I imagine the Radiohead thing will be like. It's not going to be... imagine if the Radiohead thing's an FPS now. But, yeah, I would recommend this. Like, I think you'll pretty much within half an hour know if this game is for you or not. It's only 4 or 5 hours long, I think, and I'm loving it because it's... I've been looking forward to this for a long time. The Artful Escape, if you haven't heard of it. Are you guys going to try it out?
I am. I'm really looking forward to it. I've just got too many fucking things.
Oh, it's already downloaded. I'm playing it this weekend.
Yeah, I'm doing simultaneously game, I don't know if I could talk about, and also Forgotten City. So just there's too many thoughts to handle other things.
You're gonna have a treat with the Forgotten City.
I'm like 4 hours in, and I mean you've talked extensively. It's fucking amazing. Like it's mad how well that idea works.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. But yeah, The Artful Escape, I would recommend anyone try out, because if you have Game Pass, after all, it is free, and you know, you'll find out if you like it or not. Just smack some headphones on and play it really loud, or if you have a good sound system, just play it loud. You guys have been playing Lost in Random, which is out today. I've been excited for this game. I know, Joe, you did a preview last week where you were very excited for it.
Yeah.
You've been playing the full thing.
I've not gone still... further than I got in my preview, I have to say. So
my thoughts
about the preview remain intact.
Well, you didn't talk about it on the podcast, so people can hear your thoughts on the preview.
Right. Matt, where are you at?
Are you enjoying it?
I am in what I believe is known as Two Town.
Okay, yeah. So I got to the end of Two Town in my section, so we played more or less the same stuff. So my feelings about it were, I really love how it looks. I really like the sort of, it's got the proper dark fairy tale, like, it feels family friendly, but then there's some stuff that pops up and you're like, what the fuck? This is really horrible. Which is cool. And I came out really intrigued by the combat. And from, I understand from reviews which are trickling out as we speak, like, I think the combat maybe doesn't expand in the way I was hoping it would, which is a bit sad. But I will say that the combat itself is still really fun. I love the idea behind it. It's properly strange. Like, you start every battle completely powerless, apart from the ability to knock crystals off of your enemies, which for every crystal you pick up, you draw a card, more or less. Like, maybe it's there's sort of a power system at work that I can't quite work out. And you draw these cards, and then at a certain point, you can roll this little dice friend you have, and whatever number he lands on is how much mana you have to spend on the cards. So you've got this like deck building thing of like, how am I going to build the best combat deck for, like, I'm statistically, am I always going to draw a weapon that I can use? Am I going to get enough healing as I go through? And am I going to be able to drop like traps or like buffs? So it genuinely has like a, you know, a thoughtful deck building system at the heart of it, but it's translated into an action game, which is very cool. Like, it's just very interesting. And like, you can get fucked over. Like, there were times where I built a bad deck and I was just like repeatedly not drawing a weapon and just having to fucking run away all the time. And I just think it's just really interesting. I love that a game is trying something that genuinely is very rare in a preview, that you're trying to describe a system that literally has no immediate precedent. Like, there's nothing else like that. And that's always a good sign. That's like, something different is happening here.
Yeah, I think kind of like, we'd casually mentioned the idea that there's a little bit of Final Fantasy VII Remake parallel in the way that the combat works, in that, like, when you throw Dicey, your dice friend, it puts the world in a frozen state, so you can then have a look through, like, okay, so Dicey's rolled a 2. That means I've got 2 mana to spend. Let me have a look through my cards. Am I going to spend 2-1 cards, which, you know, in my deck at the moment is that will give me a sword and it would let me, like, maybe use a healing potion or something like that? Or do I want to spend both of them together and give myself a bow and arrow or stuff like that? And I like that the fact that when you give yourself a sword, like, that sword will eventually break. So you need to make sure there are multiple swords in your deck. Like, all of this stuff, I think, is really fun. And that is a shame that, you know, if that doesn't get any more advanced or interesting than that. But I still think it's one of those things that, like, you know, there are plenty of shooters where the shooting feels good and it never fundamentally doesn't get any more interesting because the enemy design isn't good. But if the shooting feels good, the shooting feels good, right? So, like, if the core of that system is good, like, I'm sure it's almost certainly that game's, like, 6 hours long, isn't it? It can't be.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. I mean, I got to the end of Two Town, and there are 6 places within 2 or 3 hours. So it's not like, yeah, certainly not going to be an enormous proposition.
So I think it's probably enough to, like, keep it afloat for that kind of... If it's as long as I think it is, then I think it will hold my attention. I really like the look of it. It does oddly feel a little bit, and I don't mean this as an insult, but like a PlayStation 2 game, in the way that you explore the kind of worlds. They're very kind of like, from an era where worlds had to be a little bit more like tightly built because of the fact that, like, there's not that many NPCs we can put in. But that does mean that while you might only see one NPC on every corner of these towns, they're fucking weird. Each one you meet is really bizarre and quite memorable, in very much the way, like, I don't want to say they're definitely inspired by, but there's a lot of Laika in this, a lot of Coraline and box trolls especially.
Yeah, like, and it comes, I think, I follow the kind of, I don't think he's the director, but he's certainly the guy that runs that studio on Instagram. And he does a lot of those things as sculpted creatures, and you can really feel it. Like, you can feel that someone has made those things. They're not just like flat digital creations, and I do love that feeling that it's sort of it's got quite a like a chunky like odd claymation-y feel to it, and things move that way as well. Like, everything kind of moves in that slightly stilted, interesting way that claymation does. Like, it's cool. I like it.
Yeah, it's got that thing where, like, nothing proportionally makes sense, yet it looks right. Like, everybody's kind of like big bodies on very small legs, and like at heights that don't make sense, and wolves where their noses curl back almost like in a Burton style kind of spiral. A lot of that really good, like, accent work across the board, like meeting a wolf that comes clearly from somewhere in Yorkshire, but then the next time you'll meet an American fish.
They've clearly had some fun with how that stuff's put together, which actually is something that I think Zoink in general have always done quite well, like that. They did, like, Stick It to the Man, and these games, they're always most of their games are written in conjunction with Ryan North, who did like Dinosaur Comics and has written Squirrel Girl and stuff. And like, there's a lot of that kind of vibrancy and weirdness that comes through. It's just really nice. Like, I'm glad that this thing exists because I don't think it's going to set the world on fire, but I think it's like a very unusual thing made by a studio that's been given the license to do that. You see that so rarely at this scale that it's very cool.
Especially from a studio, from a publisher like EA, you know, like has a reputation of being very risk averse. And yes, it's obviously very, very small budget compared to the games that EA have historically made. But it is nice they've got this brand where they're just like, here, have some more money than you normally would be able to as an indie studio and just go off and make something that's quite indie.
Well, I think this weirdly busy period at the end of the year has made a lot of people forget that It Takes Two definitely is still a Game of the Year contender for a lot of people. And like, the idea that EA Originals has had this and It Takes Two in 1 year is like a massive boot. You know, it's like a massive feather in their cap. Like, this, they're doing some really cool stuff out of that program.
Yeah. I mean, It Takes Two is, I think, now currently tied as my Game of the Year. And you know where it might have slipped to second? Because I'm currently on the last level of Psychonauts 2. And I think Psychonauts 2 has edged it for me as my current Game of the Year. We all know Deathloop comes out. I'm hearing good things. Could be good. Previews were very promising. But who knows? I don't know. I've been playing... I know Jesse spoke extensively about Psychonauts a couple of weeks ago, but I just want to say, since then, I've pretty much... I'm on the last level now. It surprised me how much I love this game. I've absolutely loved pretty much every minute of it. It surprised me. Maybe I was just a bit ignorant about it because I never played the original. I didn't realize how genuinely funny it was and how much like Grim Fandango it was. It took me by surprise. You know, obviously it's got Tim Schafer behind it. It's going to have that sort of writing. He's been writing like that for 30 years. Like, it's going to have some of that come through. But I think the biggest part to me was also the music, because they've got the same composer from those games. Like, the music just sounds like Grim Fandango music to me, and that makes me very happy. And apart from just it being genuinely funny and charming, and the level design and the art design being great to look at, it's just really fun to play as well. And it's surprised me, I think I talked to you briefly about Matt about this, how complex the combat can be at times, and some of the puzzle solutions.
The combat weirdly reminds me of Doom Eternal, in that every single thing has a very distinct thing that works against it, which Doom does really well, is like all the guns are calibrated that like this gun works against this creature and all that. But I was really surprised at how much Psychonauts actually demands out of you. Like, there are characters that you can fight that require you to use two powers in order to kind of work it down. And then you start to realize, like, so for example, one of them, I think it's called the Sensor, you have to knock it out before you can really start beating it up. So you pick up things and chuck it. But then it'll do combat encounters where there's no things on the floor to pick up, but there are things flying around that you can shoot them out of the sky and then pick up the things that they've got and then hurl it at the sensors and then do it. And like, all of that interplay, like, I love any systemic stuff that works like that. And that really surprised me. And then, I like that the fact that it works in that, like, LucasArts games lineage of that there are characters that you go and speak to and have multiple dialogue options, and then they'll be like, oh, I've got an item, but you can't have it. And it's just like, oh, I've got to go and figure out how to get that. Which is completely Monkey Island through and through, or Grim Fandango. But the way that you do it is through an action platformer system rather than a point-and-click game.
I'm loving it so much, It's just surprised me how good it is. And, you said it reminded you of Doom. I don't know if it's just because of the telekinesis ability. It just reminded me of Control as well, quite a bit.
Oh, nice.
I think it's mainly because you just have that ability, and you are kind of almost forced to attack to get health back as well. Because you can, like, I've died a lot of times. I will say a lot of times I've died has been through some quite annoyingly imprecise platforming. But, it's not a perfect game by any means. But I'm just having such a great time. And it's also surprised me how long it is as well. Like, I've been playing this game a long time now, and I've only just got to the last level.
Oh, really?
Like, I'd say it's a good 12 hours, I'd say. I have been taking my time, though, like, collecting a lot of things along the way. I love this game so much. And, I think it is currently, maybe, my game of the year. Are you planning on getting around to that one, Joe? There's just too many games.
I mean, I've had it downloaded since launch day, and I just keep playing stuff and not finishing it and being like, you know what, I'm just going to stop. And I don't need to be up. I think that's such a weird thing. Feeling of needing to be up to date all the time. And I'm like, I'm just gonna end up hating all the stuff I'm playing instead of loving the things I play individually. Yeah. So I'm gonna stop and come to it. It might be a Christmas game for me. Although if it is in contention for Game of the Year, I should get there earlier. But it's one of those things where I'm like, I cannot wait, but I've just got too much in the way. There's stuff happening.
Yeah. Yeah. I am loving Psychonauts.
How long is Forgotten City?
It depends. I got the final canon ending about 4.5 hours.
Oh shit, awesome. Okay. Well, I'm gonna press forward with that then.
Yeah. But it depends. I only got one of the other endings before that though. There's four different endings. Right. So I only got the second one and the last one in about 4.5 hours.
How do you know you've got the canon ending?
It tells you.
Okay, good.
Right. You'll get a trophy literally called Canon Ending.
Really?
Yeah.
That's absurd.
And it'll be pretty obvious that this is the big ending, I think.
Cool.
I can't wait to actually talk to you without spoiling that for everyone else. But yeah, great game. Let's get to some feedback even. As you said, no endless search this week. But God, is there a lot of stuff we've talked about. And all good stuff that you should play and watch. Matt, you've got the first piece of feedback.
Yeah, this is from Chris, who says, "Ahoy, new listener here. Out of curiosity, where did the whole respect the sea thing come from? I've heard it mentioned a few times over the episodes I've listened to. Cheers," from Chris.
Chris, go listen to the Drowning Special. You'll know it when you see it, because it's called the Drowning Special. But I hope you respect the sea, Chris. Don't just take it. It's not lip service we're paying to the sea. We believe it wholeheartedly.
We've got the Drowning Special. We've got the Sandwich Special, which, I don't know, they're both very good. I think the Drowning Special is very good, but the Sandwich Special, at the end of that, I was almost in tears, I think.
But it has nothing to do with respect the sea, I should say. Don't go looking for answers in the Sandwich Special. Except unless you want answers to what's the sandwich that could turn your asshole inside out. Because that is answered at the end of that. I'll spoil that for you now. But we should say the respect the sea thing actually came from a listener whose name has been lost to time, except if I actually bothered to go back and look. But we've embraced it as a mantra. You must respect the sea. It's so much so that it's now on the wall of a pub. In Stoke Newington. So that's good.
Yeah, I think we've just got to remember sometimes we've got new listeners, because God, we can talk some nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if you're on the first floor of that nonsense, you're having a good time, aren't you?
Yeah, that's it. You want to be on the not the ground floor, the first floor. Don't be on the ground floor for it.
I'm in America at the moment. I've got a piece of feedback here from Jack Fulham, who says, "Hey guys, I had the one and only Joe Screbbles pop into the Alice in Wonderland themed cocktail bar I work in last weekend. I was so stunned by the beautiful Tash in person as I opened the door. All I could say was, hey, I recognise you."
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that happened.
What's the weirdest place you've all been recognised by fans of the pod and IGN as a whole? Hope you've enjoyed your time in the bar, Joe. Did you enjoy your time in the bar?
I did. It was a lovely cocktail bar.
You can't say you didn't.
No, but I genuinely did, so it's fine. I've got pictures of it and everything. It was a Mad Hatter's Tea Party themed cocktail bar in Oxford. I'd just been for some delightful tapas, and then we stopped off there afterwards. Had a really nice whiskey cocktail served in a very unusual contraption called a dipping dog, which I'd never heard of before. It's like a big brass conical flask that they filled with whiskey, and then I poured it into, like, I kind of mixed it into another glass. It was great. And Jack was very nice. I was a little confused because we came in, Jack said, "Hey, I recognize you," and then said nothing more, but continued serving us for the next hour. So I was like, well, I'm not going to say, where do you recognize me from? Because then it's like, what if he just means, I saw you on the street earlier today?
Well, I saw you on Crime Watch.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, do you recognize me from my many media appearances? We just sort of sat there in like a stalemate of politeness for the night. But he was the consummate professional behind the bar, made me some great drinks.
There we go. Didn't poison you.
And yes, the weirdest place I'd be recognised by fans of the pod is an Alice in Wonderland themed cocktail bar. That's my answer.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of asked that question, not really thinking about it. That's not really a weird place. Do you remember that time we were walking through Leicester Square?
That's the one I was thinking of, yeah.
You probably listened to the podcast. Sorry, I can't remember your name. Ran up to us and I held my pockets like I thought I was being mugged.
I mean, yeah. You don't want someone running directly towards you in Leicester Square.
No, but it was good in the end. Actually, do you know what? Last week when I was in Brighton, a lovely man walked over and said... It recognised me, Creeper, Lucy and Tam. So that was lovely.
I had a wonderful one recently in Sheffield where a friend of mine picked me up from the station. This sounds like we get recognised all the time.
This is literally the only like three times it's ever happened.
But this was the best, like just the best timing ever. I'm really sorry I don't remember your name, but someone came up to me just as my friend from uni picked me up from the station and said some lovely things. And my friend Jamie was just like, "What the fuck is going on?" Like, he had no idea why anyone would come up to me. I was like, "Yeah, you know, just do this podcast. Actually, it was pretty popular." That was fun. Yeah. Matt,
never.
That's because you need to hang around with me more, don't you?
Absolutely not.
Look, if you recognise Matt in the street, run up to him, scream in his face.
To be quite fair to Matt, I think for almost you've been here?
Well, it'll be 3 years in March.
Mm. Yeah, like 2.5 years roughly. For a good year and a half of that, we haven't been outside.
This is true. Yeah.
So that's probably contributing quite a lot to that. Do you know what? Next time I see you, I'll recognise you.
Oh, thank you, Simon.
That's so nice.
Yeah. Joe, you've got a long old email. I did cut down considerably. Bloody
hell. You have cut this down?
This is about half as long as it was, yeah.
Jesus Christ. Right. This is from Madison in Belfast. Long-time listener to what I consider to be one of the most authentic, never had that one before, and enjoyable podcasts. So much so that I've thought about writing in many times. I felt I had to break my silence after your recent request for some feedback. Do we not have enough feedback and we're just begging for it? Is that what happened?
IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com
And a few topics of chat resonated with me. This has turned into somewhat of a fucking beef Wellington. I don't know what that means, but bear with me. To make it easier for you to tuck in, I've divided it up if you decide to include any of it. Well, I hear half of it's gone. Crisp chat. We haven't done crisp chat for a while, have we? I haven't listened to the last one. I'm sorry.
No, we haven't, but I'm glad it's back.
Yeah. I find there's nothing better than a Tesco meal deal club sandwich combined with your flavour preference of Tato's crisps. See, we don't get Tato's crisps in meal deals over here, and I fucking love them. To make a decadent crisp sandwich. Washing all that down with an innocent Blue Bolt, not a smoothie, is hard to resist. A listener last week asked, this is a different thing. What are we thinking? We responding to that?
Do we get the club sandwich up here?
Yeah.
It's been so long since I've gone in a Tesco.
Is it really?
Or bought a meal deal. Like I
still quite regularly get a meal deal from my local Tesco. Yeah.
I don't have a Tesco that near me. My nearest Tesco is like a good 20-minute walk away.
I'm generally Caesar salad, one of the big cans of Red Bull, because I have no respect for my guts, and maybe like I know it's naughty, but I'm quite partial to little packets of Fridge Raiders. You know, those like reconstituted chicken nuggets. I like those.
Why not? It's been far too long since I've had a Skips and Drench.
Yeah. Is Drench even still around?
Yeah.
Is Drench a casualty of the pandemic? No, we're all right.
Nah, you can find it. But yeah, it's a good combo.
Next section. A listener last week asked about games and films we defend and promote despite lack of general adoration. So on that note, Dog Soldiers, which is a film that a lot of people really love.
I've not seen it.
You haven't seen it?
No.
I think you'd quite like it. Dog Soldiers is a British action/horror/comedy film that is, in my opinion, one of the best and most underrated films in general. If by some chance you haven't heard anything about this film, I'll try and sum it up. A young but promising team of British Army lads who would much rather be at the pub watching the game or at home with their wives are instead on a special training weekend in the mountains when they come across the bodies of some gored Special Forces members. They have to survive the night against their unknown enemy. I am the furthest thing from a typical British Army lad, but that element is important to mention because while not the defining feature of the film, it helps it establish a truly difficult balance between the humour and the likability of the characters with the real tension and horror of the film. If any of you are unaware of it, please seek it out and watch it. And if you have seen it, I would love to hear your thoughts on it. I think it's good. It's one of those films that me and my friends like turned on a lot when we were drinking as teenagers. You know, when you're just sitting around, you're like, let's watch Shrek 2 or Dog Soldiers. Mm-hmm. Which one?
Maybe I'll pop it on. Oh, I will say it's a well-written little critique of it, which has got me interested.
And has been careful enough to leave out what the enemy is, which is very good. The other thing I would say is that I've forgotten what I was going to say, so I'll carry on.
Good.
A game I feel compelled to defend is Dontnod's 2018 janky RPG Vampyr. It received a mixed bag of reviews upon release, with a lot of issue taken with load times and aspects of the game's design. While it will make you suffer some long load times and crash relatively frequently, I will die on the hill of this game being fantastic. Enhanced greatly by its soundtrack and period/genre-appropriate voice acting, it's a fun blend of dialogue, exploration, and stamina-based combat a la Code Vein, etc. I never really got into Vampyr. I played a few hours. I love the idea, but it is execution that was an issue for me. Mm-hmm.
I unfortunately think the combat in that game is dreadful, but I do like the links that you make between kind of people. There's a lot of like good, like social RPG elements to it.
That's it. I wish it wasn't a game in which you had to fight people. I wish you were just a strong vampire who killed everyone or chose not to.
Yeah, I would ask you, Joe, what's games that people don't like that you defend to death, but I already know it's Dynasty Warriors.
Dynasty Warriors 3 and Dynasty Warriors 8 XL. They're the two.
Is it time? Well, I suppose this one isn't considered that bad, but are you going to break up El Shaddai? Are we getting that remake anytime soon?
Well, it's just come out on PC. They've just done remastered PC version. I very nearly bought it the other day before going, why the fuck am I buying El Shaddai? It's really good. If you want to play something that is clearly the inspiration for a lot of Devil May Cry, play El Shaddai. It's amazing. Madison ends with, this leads me nicely to my own question. Like most, I have long and often overlapping lists of favorite games, books, and films. The majority of these titles I will have played/read or watched multiple times. However, there are a much smaller number of games, books, and films that are in my favorites of their respective mediums, but are treated quite differently to how I approach and consume the other more standard favorites. It's quite hard to pass in my brain. Whether that is because they have been a more profound personal experience or because I subconsciously don't want to get bored of them, I will either have only experienced them once in my life or go 5 or so years between deciding to play or watch them for that second time. I see. For me, The Neon Demon, Dog Soldiers, Kill List, The Last of Us, Child of Light, and The Picture of Dorian Gray are such titles. That's a weird list. I love it. How about you? Are there any games, books, or films that you guys have maybe only spent time with once and or hold in a higher regard and are still 100% amongst your favorites? In terms of games... Question. That's pretty much all games. I almost never replay games. I can't think of many games I've gone back to in like a play the whole story through twice way.
So I have replayed. I'm weird. I do replay and rewatch stuff that people probably don't replay and rewatch. Like I have replayed Red Dead 2. Like there'll be blood. It's a film I watch every 6 months to a year, which is probably a hard watch for a lot of people. I don't know. I think like there's obvious stuff like. Even saying that, The Last of Us Part 2 has only been out over a year, but I have kind of got the hankering to play that again.
On Madison's list, Kill List is a film I've only watched once.
Yes.
But that's for that reason of, like, I think it's absolutely astonishing, but it's fucking horrible. Yeah. And, like, I just don't think I can go back to it.
I've seen it, like, 4 or 5 times, but I mainly think that's because it's been, like, oh, I've been with someone that's been, like, we should watch this. And you put it on because they've never heard of it.
Yeah.
I don't know, there's the obvious ones that are hard watch, like I've only ever seen Schindler's List once. It's undeniably a brilliant film. You're not popping it on all the time, are you?
I don't think there's anything where I've like consciously gone, I'm saving this for myself. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know, games is, I know, it's easier to think of films, I think, than games.
I think also games, I would say, even if I was like a game replayer, I think games in which you craft your own story through choices, I would have very little wish to go back to and see the other stuff. Like, I'm quite into the my choices are my choices. That's how the story played out. That's the end. Especially games that don't do the here's the true ending, which I often find very fucking annoying.
I know what you mean.
Like,
I think with films, it's ones to me that I know I saw in the cinema and I know they won't be better when I see them at home. Like, I have, when I watched Dunkirk in a cinema, I was almost in tears almost every 5 minutes. I did rewatch it at home. Still a brilliant film to watch. Just didn't have the same impact being surrounded by it. Mm-hmm. Interstellar, the same. Really? Arrival's one I haven't rewatched since the cinema.
I've never rewatched Blade Runner 2049 and I never will. Because
really?
Yeah, because like I watched it twice in the cinema and that's exactly where that film needs to be seen. And no, not going anywhere else.
Yeah, just like we've got Dune coming up soon. Like, that is one that I imagine you'll see in the cinema and be like, Dune's not going to be one you watch over and over again, is it?
No. The thing is with that is like it's got to, hopefully Denis will get to do a part two, in which case then yes, I'll watch part one again on a Blu-ray, but it won't be where I want to watch it, I can tell you that.
There we go. It's a good question to open up to people at IGN_UKfeedback@IGN.com. Any games, books or films that you absolutely love, one of your favourites, but you just have only seen once or maybe twice with a minimum 6 year gap. I don't know. This was a good chat this week about lots and lots of good and exciting things.
Bloody hell, it was long.
Oh, and we didn't even imagine if we'd done an endless search. God, we might be the first ever 2 hour one. God,
we've almost certainly done a 2 hour one.
Have we? Just probably. A standard one? A standard 2 hour? I don't know.
Maybe.
Should we just waffle for half an hour and see?
No, what I will say at the end though is
I am
go and watch Matt and Cardi's Arcane From Dishonored to Deathloop breakdown, because it was fucking awesome. I watched it this morning and I haven't seen it before.
You're very kind.
A really good video. If you're excited for Deathloop, it'll make you go, I want Deathloop more. So that, and if that's not what you were going for, then I don't know what you were.
Exactly. And what, Deathloop's out on Tuesday. Finally. Yeah. It feels like we've been waiting an age for this game. Looking forward to playing it. I suppose we'll talk about that next week a lot. Matt, it means you're on the podcast again next week, probably, because if we need anyone to talk about Arcane, it'll be you, won't it?
Yeah, I'm sure I can clock in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, lovely. I suppose that's it.
Yeah.
What music? Is it too on the nose to just put everything in its right place?
No, put it on, because I love that intro.
It's the really only excuse you're going to get to put Radiohead at the end of a podcast.
Very true. Let's get it on there.
Okay, lovely stuff. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, enjoy yourselves.
See us.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.